Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Press Start podcast. Apologies for missing the last couple of weeks. I'm sure you all missed us greatly. But yeah, sometimes life just gets in the way of these things. But we are back, and as a result of our 2 week absence, we've got a lot to talk about. So without any further ado, I'll introduce my co-host, Liam. Liam, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I had a bit of a frustrating time with games, but I'm getting back into them, so all's good.
Yes, we have hit the time of the year where games start releasing again, so it's exciting. There's a lot of good stuff coming out, a lot of decent things on the horizon now. Forza 7's within touching distance, the new Assassin's Creed, Shadow of War, my Xbox One X will be here as soon as, you know, as soon as I know it, really. So yeah, it's all good times. But yeah, we've got a couple of releases to touch upon in the last few weeks. If you have found this podcast through 411 Mania, or listened to us through the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, you'll know that both Liam and I are currently writing on the games section of 411 Mania. Liam's done a couple of reviews, and I've done a few, and a weekly column, The Gaming Hours, where I look at the right, the wrong, and the ridiculous. Yeah, I know it's tenuous alliteration, but hey-ho. And it's just a sort of the right, wrong, and ridiculous of the gaming week. So we'll get to the games we've reviewed, but one of them is kind of a bit of both. Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, long-awaited fighting game, sequel to the much-loved classic Dreamcast beat-em-up Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Marvel vs. Capcom 3, obviously, on the Xbox 360, went through a few different variations, as these games always tend to. And Infinite is the new IP. It's pretty disappointing, I'm not going to lie. It's not an awful game. The fighting mechanics are solid. It's really kind of fun to actually play it, but there's such a small roster. Little things like there's no difficulty mode or difficulty settings for the story mode. Like, I'm not great at fighting games. I quite like starting them off easy and building them up. Once I get used to the mechanics of it and stuff, this throws you completely in at the deep end, and I keep getting my ass handed to me. So I don't feel like I'm learning and losing. But other than that, like, the arcade battles, really good fun. Online's starting to populate up now, pretty good, and yeah, good fun game. Probably not worth the price tag at the moment, but what's certainly not worth the price tag is the collector's edition. Just need to go and look online at the pictures of it. You were promised Infinity Stones. They looked like crystals, shiny crystals backed with little LEDs shining through, all that sort of thing. Looks very nice. They're essentially little painted eggs. They're dreadful. Please Google the images. They are. It's almost hilarious. If it wasn't so bad, like, if I had bought one of these, like, they cost like $200. If I had bought this, I would have been furious. And that kind of got me onto a whole rant about collector's editions. And I know that's something kind of close to your heart this week, Liam. So I'll let you get your vent on about them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a sucker for collector's editions usually. I got sort of a couple of the Assassin's Creed, sort of like special edition games. You get like art books and stuff like that with it, which is fine. What I've been looking at is the Assassin's Creed Origins, which they've got, I think, 7 different editions, which the one I've gone for is the God's Edition. So you get the game, you get sort of a statue of Bayek, who's going to be sort of the main protagonist, which, when you look at it, the extra sort of 30, 40 quid is usually pretty worth it if you like collectibles. Now, they've also got a Dawn of the Creed edition, which is about £120.
Okay.
Which you get a statue, you get sort of a steelbook, lithographs, stuff like that. Now, they've also got the Dawn of the Creed Legendary edition, which goes at a fucking eye-watering, like, £800.
Yeah.
Which you get the statue, you get two steelbooks for some reason. You get a amulet, lithographs, art book, season pass, blah, blah, blah. Now, I was looking at that, and when you think, like, sort of the base game is usually around £50, the extra sort of £750, I don't think you're getting that much in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's
700 odd quid. It's ridiculous.
Well, that's basically, it's like 15 or 16 times what the game is.
Yeah.
You know,
well, yeah, when you say it like that, it's even worse.
Yeah.
Like, to buy, you could probably buy all that stuff or sort of replicas of them and not spend £800.
Yeah.
For essentially a game. You're paying £800 for a game.
Yeah. It's mental. I mean, I believe I've looked at the one that you're talking about, and like, the only sort of defense in it is, and I'm really not defending it, like, that's an insane amount of money. And especially as, like, I know the Gods edition you've gone for is like, what, £70 or £80 or something?
I think I found it on Amazon, it was sort of £85.
Right, yeah. So like, that I think is kinda alright. I think that's fair enough. The statue and the more expensive one, the much more expensive one, I believe is like half a meter tall. As opposed to your sort of like 10, 12 inches or so. But I mean, it's still just batshit crazy. And when you look at the quality of the Marvel versus Capcom, like Infinity Stones, like, they're just, if I'd spent £200 on that, I'd have been furious. And it's just, it's almost too big a gamble. Now, if this is going to be the sort of precedent that's being set, you're going to want to see these things before you pay for them, which you can't, because they get sold out by scalpers who want to flip them for a profit. It's insane.
I think the Legendary Edition, they only made, I think, 999 copies of it.
Right, okay.
Of that particular version.
Yeah.
But even still, like, it's a game. You're paying £800 for a game.
Yeah.
Like, even with everything else that goes with it, if you take the game out of it, that's £750 for a big statue, which you can probably find stuff like that for about £200 if you wanted to.
Yeah.
What I think they might be doing is starting to price sort of the average gamer out of the market.
Yeah.
Like I've said, I've got a few collector's editions. I like them. I like the statues you get with them, the boxes, stuff like that. Usually you can find them 80, 90 quid.
Yeah.
I think I got the Syndicate Charing Cross edition. When it came out, it was £80.
Mm.
Like, so that's £50 for the game, and then £30 for a statue, sort of a couple of, you got a couple of maps with it, some postcard stuff like that. But even £30 for a statue isn't a bad price.
No.
Like, for a limited edition one. But yeah, it's just, I think the only other ridiculous one, I think we were talking about this a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
It was the Saints Row, like, $1 million edition.
Yeah, yeah.
Which they only made one of, but you got, oh God, all sorts of stuff, like hot air balloon rides and a shuttle into space and all sorts.
Yeah.
They can deliver it to you and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which I know they probably made it as a joke. They didn't expect anyone to buy it.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, this is Saints Row.
Yeah.
But for a more sort of serious game like Assassin's Creed or Marvel versus Capcom, those editions for such poor quality is, I think, just bad form on their part.
Yeah.
Really?
No, I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, if you want to get in touch with the show, let us know what you're thinking about this sort of insane run of collector's editions. Do you buy them? Do you like them? Do you think they're good value for money? Let us know. It's Out After Dark 216 on Twitter, The Grim Fish, if you want to get Liam. You can also contact both of us through Progress Scream, which is the name of our Progress Wrestling podcast, which you can also check out on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, as well as through the Facebook page. Just search Screaming for Progress on Facebook or Progress Scream on Twitter. You'll find us, get in touch, and yeah, give us your thoughts on the show or indeed, if you like Progress Wrestling, listen to that as well. I'd love to hear from you if you do. But back to games, I will admit that hell froze over and I bought a Nintendo Switch during our couple of weeks off. I don't really know what to say about it yet, to be totally honest with you. I've not really had a huge amount of time to properly play with it. So yeah, I'm just kind of waiting and dealing with it until I get a proper chance, because I'm not really deep enough into Zelda to know if I like it or not yet. I'm kind of lost. I don't really know what I'm meant to be doing. So there's that.
Yeah, I think with the Switch, because it's still sort of quite early in its life, and unless you like Zelda and you're into Zelda, there's not an awful lot of other games on there.
Yeah,
you to play this sort of this early adopter thing that companies have. Like I got a Xbox One quite early in its life, and for the first sort of year, there wasn't really that many sort of what you call AAA games out.
Yeah, yeah.
There was sort of Titanfall, which is all online, which annoyed me immensely.
Yeah,
so it's, yeah, you find yourself sort of keep going back to your 360.
Yeah, I mean it's tough. Plus, I mean, I went to maybe look at getting something just to play on the go as well. And likes of Bomberman, it's $49.99. It's £50 for Bomberman. I'm not paying that for Bomberman. I think I've got three different versions of Bomberman I can play on my Xbox. Like I could probably get a cheap knockoff on my iPhone if I really wanted to play it on the go. So yeah, so far, jury is out. I will say, I'm sure that I will get into it. I think it kind of hinges on me enjoying Zelda or not. Given I'm not a massive Zelda fan, we will see. So the bright side is I'm definitely going to end up buying Skyrim for it and playing that wherever I am. So if it becomes a portable Skyrim machine, I'm kind of all right with that. It's fine.
It's a lot of money to spend just for Skyrim, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, it is. Don't get me wrong. I'm thinking there's going to be other things that I play on it as well, like going forward. Like, I've already had a decent shot of Mario Kart. It is what it is. Like, it's pretty good fun. I think the more I have it, the more I'll use it properly, if that makes sense. The other problem is that there's been so much come out that I've been playing. Like, nothing's been able to compete with Destiny 2 at the moment. Like, I'm only just now starting to slow right down with my Destiny playing. Because it's amazing. You know what I mean? It's such a good game and it's such a grindy game that I'm only now starting to go, right, I'm going to slow down till new stuff starts happening and then I'm going to drop in and out of it. But yeah, we've both played quite a lot. Like I've played, I sort of mentioned my thoughts on Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. I also reviewed Project Cars 2. I've been playing that for most of this week. My review is going to be on 411 Mania, well, the same day as this, actually. So fire over, get my full thoughts on that. It's so, so much of a driving simulator that it's brutal. Like it's completely unforgiving. There was a lot of swearing, a lot of controller throwing, and yeah. It's hard work. But yeah,
sort of like Forza but knocked up a notch.
Yeah, like it's everything turned up to 11. Like it's so difficult. Like the first, like I'm pretty good at Forza, I'm pretty good at driving games. The first race I had, like on fully default settings, I got lapped on a 5-lap race.
Jesus.
And, you know, I've been driving for real for like 8 years and I'm pretty good at driving games. Like, I was pretty good at Dirt Rally, for crying out loud. It was like Dark Souls. And then I'm playing this and getting absolutely beasted at it. So tweaked them a little bit and started winning races, and then had to race in the snow. And I couldn't get to the first corner of the track. Like, the car just slipped away into the bushes. It's brutal, but a lot of people are liking it. It's fundamentally, it's not doing anything wrong, but it's so hard. It's just going to take so much time to get where you want to be with it, that I think it's really going to lose out to Forza when that comes out next week, which I'm already excited for, and is probably going to be downloading over the next couple of days onto my console. So, looking forward to that one. Liam, I know that you also reviewed a couple of games. I'll let you talk about those just now. First one up was Conan Exile.
Yeah, so this is... I wouldn't compare it to Skyrim. It's... The layout's the same as it's sort of open world, first person. That's where I would draw the line. It was extremely sparse. There didn't seem to be a lot to do. I mean, this is sort of part of Xbox One sort of preview program. Yeah. So it's liable to get sort of more added to it and tweaked a bit. But one thing that it shouldn't have bothered me, but it did, was the fact that if you make your character female, you can have them topless. Which, yeah. I'm not against topless women or boobs. No, quite the opposite. But in that sort of context, like, it wasn't needed. Like, you didn't need that option, really. I think the programmers may have got a bit bored and just thought, yeah, we'll let you make her boobs bigger and topless. Well, why not?
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, you could argue the realism, but yeah. What about the actual game, though? Like,
it's playable. I didn't find it much fun. Maybe because this was like, it's like the difference between this and Skyrim is like the difference between Forza and Need for Speed. Like, the sort of one's a simulation, the other one's arcadey. It's a bit like that, whereas it's truly open world. You have to forage for everything. Like, you have to find leaves and fibre and stuff to make your own clothes, build your own homes by finding logs and stuff like that.
So maybe
I'm just sort of spoiled a bit by the usual open world games we get.
Yeah, I think that it sounds to me an awful lot like Ark. You know, that you're just are almost like an adult Minecraft, really.
Yeah, you're sort of dropped in there and then it's sort of off you go, sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of sounds cool. I have it on my hard drive to play as well, actually. So I'll need to give it a shot at some point, but... on reading your review of it does seem a little bit of a grind for my liking, especially when everything else I'm playing is a total grind, and then by the time I've caught up with everything, there's going to be new raids on Destiny and Shadow of War and Assassin's Creed, and I'm invariably going to end up buying 2K18, probably for the Switch. Actually, I think I'm going to get it for the Switch. I feel like I'll play it more on the go. As an interesting aside, because I always buy it, so I'm thinking, why don't I do it for that for once? Interesting, yeah. So we don't need to talk about the 2K18 full roster. We could probably cover that next week, because we don't really have enough time to go through it all today. But there was another game there that you were reviewing. So it was the Naruto Collection. Am I correct?
Yeah, Naruto, it's a bit of a mouthful. Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm Legacy, which is a collection of four sort of remastered games from Naruto. If If you're not familiar with the anime, it's basically a kid in his village and he wants to be leader of the village, essentially. And he sort of fights to save the day. It's not so much about the story, it's more based around the battles, which are, in true Japanese fashion, completely over the top. Like, you end up destroying half the ground with certain moves, which would kill any normal man, but these people just sort of spring up and turn themselves into giant foxes.
Yeah. Okay.
And it is fun. I would say 2, 3, and 4 are more fun than the first. It's a bit of a grind, sort of running around trying to find everything, whereas the other three, it's you're given a mission, you go there, sort of have a battle or do the side mission or whatever. It was, for a port of an existing product, it was actually quite a lot of fun. I've still got it on my hard drive. I've still sort of given it a run out, so yeah, it's good that I'm still playing it after I've reviewed it, because usually that doesn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It does kind of get pushed to one side. Like I said, I have no knowledge of the source material with it, so I don't think it's going to be one for me. But given that you like your fighting games, it's pretty good shout for you to get that one. It looks, it certainly looks cool, like, from what I've seen of it.
The graphics are incredible.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so sort of beautifully made.
Yeah.
The graphics.
Yeah, it does look really nice. Cool. I'm excited. Excited to see more reviews from you anyway on 4-on-1. It's been good getting you on board. We've got one more game that I was forced to sit through, and I say this because it was awful. That game is Maize. So it's Maize like corn, so M-A-I-Z-E, and that is a terrible pun for a terrible game. It's really hard to explain this game. It's kind of like a first-person perspective adventure title with sort of, you know, pick up this, combine it with that, get this, do that. So think like first-person, so like Myst meets Monkey Island is the best way I can explain this. And see, for the first, like, 45 minutes, the game can be beaten in less than 3 hours. Like, there's actually an achievement for beating it in that time in one sitting. I don't think I'm ever going to get that achievement. I beat it in about 3.5 hours over 2 sittings, and that's plenty for me. I will admit that I used a walkthrough that the developers actually provided me, because they wanted everyone reviewing it to actually finish the entire game before reviewing it, because of obviously the big crux of it is the story, so on and so forth. And I get it, but I couldn't take it for 3 hours in one sitting. Couldn't take it. It starts off, the first 45 minutes, like I say, is really kind of atmospheric. Like, you wake up, you sort of are unconscious, you wake up in a field, and as you come to, you see these like humanized, like sentient bits of like corn stalk running away, and you're like, oh, okay, what's happened here? And then you have to walk through the cornfields and find different things. And do you know what? The music, the setting, the fact that it's a maze, it's all very claustrophobic. It was actually really kind of, really uncomfortable. It made me feel kind of uneasy. It was the exact sort of reason that made me remember why I've never played Resident Evil 7. Because I'm thinking, this game is rated 12. There's no way I'm going to be able to carry this sort of fear into Resident Evil. And then as soon as you start meeting characters, like, they're all so annoying and so badly written, and the story's silly, and the puzzles themselves are so convoluted and difficult. Like, some of them are really obvious, and that's fine, and some of them are just, like, reading it, I was like, no, I don't do that. Oh, I do that next. Like, Okay then. Like you have to put like chili powder into a coffee maker to clear a path for yourself. And that's actually one of the more obvious ones. It's just one that's come to mind straight away. There's nothing positive really I can say about this game except for the graphics are nice. The frame rate's not great, but the graphics are nice. It probably runs about 12 frames per second. So compared to something else, like any other first-person game, it looks horrible when you're moving, but when you're standing still, it looks great. That's kind of it. So yeah, not much more to say about that. So we're not ending on a negative note, though. Liam, what are you currently playing just now, or what's next on your to-do list?
Well, I've still got Mass Effect Andromeda, which yeah, I'm still sort of running through that, but I'm kind of splitting that with The Witcher, which I'm still a big fan of, especially if you've seen they did a video of it. I don't know if you saw it, as it's been like a year since it was released, and they've just literally done graphics on all these characters just to say like thank you for playing and stuff like that, which I thought was really nice.
Yeah, well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I got The Witcher 3, like the little bit of card that you get inside the box, so it says thank you for buying it and stuff. Like, it's really nice. You can tell they're really proud of their achievement and that sort of thing. Still feel guilty that I couldn't get into it, but every game's not going to be for everyone. As for me, I'm going to still plug away at Destiny 2 if you're on Xbox One and you fancy hitting me up for a little bit of a strike or a raid or something like that. It's out after dark 216. Same on Twitter if you want to find me there. And yeah, Liam, I'll let you share your details and sign off before we go.
So I'm the Grimfish on Twitter. If anyone wants to have a go on, I don't know, FIFA, Tekken, it's Shawshank 7 on Xbox Live.
Yeah,
So yeah,
sure.
just add me on there and I'll accept. And when I'm on, yeah.
Yeah, so there we go. If you want to hit us up, then that's great. If not, that's great as well. Just keep listening. In the meantime, it's been great having you along for another week, and with all the best will in the world, we will see you in 7. Peace out, everyone. Night.